Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you on this rainy Wednesday morning, March 12th. It is coming down out there on the way in, and I'm joined live in the KVOI studios by guest host this morning from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, Mr. Josh Jacobson. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, Grant, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, too. All kinds of things happening in Tucson last night, huh?
It started raining in the middle of the night.
Well, I want to take credit for that one before we get into this Proposition 414 thing, because not only did I wash both cars yesterday, helping bring the rain over here, I helped schedule an outdoor concert this weekend in Tucson for Friday night.
So. Oh, my gosh. Is this supposed to rain Friday?
No, this was last Friday for the Tucson Conquistadors. Yes, sir.
Yeah, the color guard, right?
Yes, very much so. So we ended up with a little bit of extra rain there in Tucson. So I think to solve our water problems in the state of Arizona, if we could just schedule an outdoor concert, it would break a streak of, say, maybe 3 months of no rain. Wash the cars on top of that, and we are just having a deluge this morning.
Thank you for your service, Grant.
Anytime. Right.
It was raining no ballots yesterday, too, from what I heard.
Yeah. Very good, Matt.
So when I think of like heavy rain coming down, it reminds me of a time in my business career where I lost $1 million in one day. And this has actually happened twice in my life out there. And the first one was Hurricane Ximena on September 3rd and 4th, 2009, an absolutely massive flood storm that wiped out a large portion of San Carlos, Sonora, where I had a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. And it took me many, many years to recover from having so much property destroyed and not having flood insurance. And I think about having lost just that much money in one night. And last night, I think the city of Tucson lost that much money equally as well, too, except it was the taxpayers' money.
Yes, they did. And that's the peril of having a special election.
Did they not spend $1 million just to do the election?
Yeah, it was $1.1 million to run a special election.
They claim.
Right. So for those that missed the news last night, Proposition 414, the Safe and Vibrant Cities ballot initiative, that was for a 0.5% sales tax that would have made our sales tax move up from 8.7% to 9.2%, absolutely went down in flames last night. Josh, what were those election results?
Oh my gosh, it was 70-30 voting no. And it was one of the largest turnouts in recent special election history. People really came out to vote no on this thing. And there's a lot of reasons why.
So let's break down some of those reasons over here, because ultimately, like in general, we tend to kind of vote left of center in the city of Tucson, mm-hmm. inside those limits. And you can see those results both with our recent mayoral and city council elections. And we even had an election a few years back about a minimum wage initiative to make the city of Tucson's minimum wage higher. And that one passed. But when it came to this particular sales tax, it wasn't even close.
Yeah. So lots of reasons there. You know, I think that we saw a diverse group of organizations that were not supporting Proposition 414. The supporters were essentially Mayor Romero and the council and TPOA, the police union and the firefighter union. And then at the very end, the UFCW came in. That's the United Food Commercial Food Workers Union, and they came in to support. But outside of that, you know, there were several different advocacy groups. We had the Arizona Multi-Housing against it. We had the Chamber against it. We had SALC against it. We had Arizona Lodging and Tourism Association against it. We had the builders come out against it. I mean, the list just goes on and on, and people that worked on this thing. I mean, I can't give enough credit to all of the different people that came out and worked on making sure that Tucson did not become the highest taxed major city in the state of Arizona.
Without a doubt. I mean, special credits got to go out to the Tucson Metro Chamber over here, and an organization that's often criticized for perhaps not being as pointed tip of the spear as we might like, right? Perhaps trading advocacy for access in some capacity to our elected officials. But President and CEO of the Metro Chamber, Michael Guyman, put out a statement this morning. Mm-hmm. He said, "I'm very pleased the voters supported our message of fiscal responsibility without the need need to raise taxes on our community's most vulnerable individuals. More work remains as we continue to collaborate with the city to support public safety, and the coalition we built is ready to engage in those important conversations. Mm-hmm. So what do you take of the Metro Chambers kind of putting their neck out there and using their PAC on the No on 414 campaign?
Well, so if we back up, Grant, and I'm going to put you on the spot and give you some credit here. You know, the listeners should know, like, historically, there was a lot of work that went in behind the scenes because, you know, we can be critical of the advocacy groups that you and I belong to. There's, you know, to be blunt, there's a lot of members that want to protect their business interests that they might have with the city government, the county government, the state government, whatever it may be. And so they don't always want to take a position of opposition to, frankly, bad policy. But there's a group of members, you and I, Carlos Ruiz, several other people that got together and made sure that our executive boards took positions of opposition. And then that really opened it up for this diverse group of advocacy groups to come on board. You know, even our good friends at the Tucson Association of Realtors, they had a huge hand in this. But it was really SALC and the chamber that had to come out first to get all of these other organizations. And, you know, Ben Bueller Garcia, another radio host on this station, he was a big part of the campaign. But I think, so if we back up to that, and then we come into where we actually got on the campaign, you know, one thing that Michael Guymon has been saying is that our local electeds, they're just out of touch with the way that the average citizen is feeling. And I think that's what we really saw last night. And, you know, a lot of credit should be given to also Kathleen Wynn, another radio show host here, and the Pima County GOP, because they never came out and made this a partisan race. Kathleen only talked about the bad policy. That's what the Republicans talked about, was the bad policy. They didn't come out and, you know, make this a Republican versus Democrat conversation. However, Mayor Romero really did. She really made this partisan. And even today, she's still blaming President Trump for being in this situation, which is, you know, somewhat baffling to me because we've seen the talking points just change over and over and over again. But the bottom line is, and we can talk more about the, you know, the nitty gritty of the campaign. But, you know, I think that what we have seen here is we've seen such strong positions by advocacy groups. And we've seen that members can influence the decisions by the executive board. And we've gotten into a place where now I personally, and, you know, you're probably in the same boat, I think that we have raised the bar of advocacy in Tucson. And this is what I expect going forward.
Well, let's talk about that voter turnout here for a minute, because sure. The only really sample size that may have been similar on an off-cycle election, right, one that wasn't run during the course of a normal election in November, was the TEP franchise agreement mm-hmm. in May of 2023. And that got in the low 60,000s in right. terms of voter turnout, right? Nothing like burying underground power lines on an off-cycle election to get people really, really excited. But when you go for their wallets, right, when you hit them in the pocketbook, voters do come out. And on that early drop of ballots, we had over 75,000 people vote in this particular election. And that's just with the early drop. There's more coming too, right?
Yeah. So I think yesterday, all in, we had like an extra 6,000 ballots dropped off at the vote centers. By the way, I was a poll watcher at the Pueblo Center. I was down there at 5 a.m. Had a great time with the volunteers that were there. No shenanigans to report. So, you know, but I don't think anybody's complaining about this outcome. So, you know, there. I think that Tara Oster, who is part of the Pima GOP and was a huge force on this campaign, you know, she is so good at organizing volunteers and getting people out to talk to people and doing it in a nonpartisan way. And we're able, you know, just increasing the turnout 5-10%, that's a monumental task. So, you know, I think we're going to have record turnouts for Republicans and even independents in this special election, at least for the recent time, once all of the votes are counted.
Well, I think that Republican turnout as well, too, was probably one of the reasons that turned the tide on this one. Sort of like the TEP franchise agreement, there was oppositions on both sides of the political spectrum. The far right, the middle right, center, and even far left was against this one.
Yeah, you know, I think the far left, I give April Putney and her team definitely a lot of credit for doing their part, you know, and she'll say, just like I will, you know, our visions of the future do not align. But, you know, they ran their campaign, we ran ours. But I think that really what we're seeing is that just the everyday common voter, whether you're a Democrat, an independent, or a Republican, when it comes down to partisanship or money coming out of your wallet, when everybody's feeling financial pinches right now, they're gonna pick taking care of their families and taking care of them. And that's what needs to happen. We're seeing that across the country.
Without a doubt. Well, with that great point, let's take a quick break over here in the action. You're listening to Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition and Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Don't go anywhere. We got lots more coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., we're bringing you all kinds of amazing local Tucson topics. We've got Lydia Aranda on Monday. We've got Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council on Tuesday with his engagement 2 hours. On Wednesday, you get me, a little food for thought, the intersection of business and politics in the city of Tucson. On Thursdays, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you all kinds of neat things from the University of Arizona. But now another segment with my good friend and colleague, Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Josh, you've always been kind enough to come down in pretty much every post-election Wednesday. We do a little post-mortem breakdown, and we're almost always getting our teeth kicked in, right? Most of the time, this is, how did we lose, and what could we learn? Well, this time we won. Are we still learning from this?
I think so. And by the way, we're only allowed to celebrate until 9 a.m., just so everybody knows.
Fair enough. Yeah, right on to the next.
Right on to the next. That's exactly right. We can't sit on our laurels.
Well, speaking of next, the city of Tucson has elections either way coming up this November, right? We're going to elect representatives in the city council from Wards 3, 5, and 6. Now, we were going to do that election anyway. Why was it that we had a special election here on March 11th at the cost of just over $1 million?
Right. Well, so, you know, I always have to give the city credit for the way that they do things, even though I don't like it. But it's, you know, again, we're always learning from this stuff, right? So just remember, for the listeners, the city has been talking about this tax for over a year now. And they were talking about putting on the ballot last August. Then they decided not to do it then. Then they talked about doing it in November. They decided not to do it then because they knew there was going to be a really high turnout and their chances of it passing going down. So they put it on in March. And for the listeners, just remember, what happens when you have a March election? Well, at the end of the previous year, we go into the holidays, and I think we found out about this election being on the ballot for sure March in front of the RTA. Let's not forget that, because that's still coming up, and we know how Mayor Romero feels about the RTA. But I think that we found out, if I remember right, about October, the end of October. So then you go into November, the holidays. You go into December, more holidays, and what happens? The boards for all of the different advocacy groups, they really don't meet. They don't really make decisions. So what that did is it pushed the whole no campaign out into, you know, basically early 2025. So it gave us a very short period of time to come together, roughly maybe 5-6 weeks, raise the money, develop a campaign, create all the messaging. We didn't have polling. And for the listeners, you know, there was this poll that I found out about after we got into this campaign. Did you hear about the poll, Grant?
Not until like way late in the game on this one over here. But you guys did a great job. I mean, there was an awful lot of signs out there, and quite large. I hadn't seen campaign signs that large since the Heather Lappin campaign over here. These things were essentially billboards, and they were everywhere in Tucson. Who was behind that?
Well, that was definitely the no campaign, obviously. And, you know, there's a lot of lessons learned. And but real quick, I want to make the point, you know, the survey that the city did last year, it showed them winning this thing 67%. So we were actually able to flip that to 70-30 and beat them. And I think that what we're seeing as Mayor Romero in particular is blaming everybody, including President Trump, or probably most President Trump, which is really amusing that we're still doing that. We're not taking, you know, credit for the successes and failures in Tucson when the leadership has been in existence here for, Mayor Romero has been part of the city council for what, 18 years now, at least. So, you know, to keep passing the buck off, it's really funny to me. But, you know, the bottom line is that people rejected 414. It was bad policy.
Without a doubt. And that 0.5% sales tax comes on the heels of a potential other election for the Regional Transit Authority, right? The RTA, for the listeners that don't know, is a 0.5% sales tax that we've all been paying for pretty much the last 18 and a half years. And it's set to expire a little more than a calendar year from now. And that 0.5% sales tax go to fixing our roads. That tax expires and sunsets. And if we wish to continue using these public funds to fix our roads, we're going to have to do a whole new tax. They can't call it a continuation, right? They're using the nomenclature RTA next. But this is actually a whole new tax coming up, and they have to ask for a 0.5% as well, too. So does the success, or I should say the failure of 414 at the ballot, help or hurt the RTA's ask, which is going to be coming up?
Yeah, so I do think that they're two different conversations. I do think that the RTA needs a lot of help. I think for that to pass, the RTA Yes campaign is going to have to do a lot of convincing still. Now, the big difference between RTA and 414, remember, 414, we were able to demonstrate and to show people the truth in taxation and to put the idea in their mind, which is factually true, that 414, the money could have been used for just about anything the mayor and council decided they wanted to use it for, even though they were saying it was going to these specific expenditures and there was no real oversight. Now, the RTA, like other propositions that have passed handily in our area, it is going to very specific, dedicated items that we know we can touch, we can feel. We know that we're going to get specific road projects done in time, you know, and we can anticipate that. There's no wiggle room. You know, of course, there's still some projects from the original RTA that are lagging, but they have to get done because it's promised to us. 414 was a slush fund, and people saw through that.
So do you think the RTA then, because they've got some flexibility of when they can do this ask, we already are having an election, as we mentioned before, in November, so it would be a pretty logical choice for them just to sort of tack that on. Or they could go out in, say, May of 2026, but that's only a couple months before the original RTA sunsets and expires. If they wait all the way till May, they might only have one shot.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So which one do you think they take on this one? Are we going to see a 0.5% sales tax ask for the art, or continuation, I should say, ask for the RTA in November or in May?
Well, if I was the chair of the RTA, I would say it depends. And what we would be doing, and I'm sure they're already doing this, is they would be doing message testing and polling to determine if it was going to pass or not.
So, Josh, we've got a Cynthia on the line right now. I've got a quick question for you and I. Good morning, Miss Cynthia. Thank you for calling in on The Morning Voice.
Good morning. I just wanted to – I had an observation, and you guys are restaurateurs, so you handle the taxes for your establishments. I went to EG's and got a sandwich, and the total without tax was $8.48. And total tax was 73 cents. And of that 73 cents, 47 cents went to the state. And then 4 cents went to the county. And 22 cents went to the city. So of the 10 cents on the dollar or whatever it is that we pay in tax when we buy something, it's broken down between the state, the county, and the city, and people don't realize that. They think everything's going to the city. So I voted no, but I wanted to say also that the RTA goes to special projects for special interests, and I know that firsthand. So I just want, you know, I'm a no on the RTA as well. I think they need to start prioritizing their money. And I'm going to continue to vote no on any of these propositions until they start using the money properly and providing for the people that are paying them.
Understood. Yep. Taxation is a tough thing, and it's a great concept that we have the right to vote for these here, Cynthia. And you're correct that ultimately the state sales tax is 5.6%. If you live in unincorporated Pima County, like where our restaurants are at Union Hospitality Group, there's that extra half a cent sales tax for the RTA, mm-hmm. so our customers are paying 6.1%. The city of Tucson currently adds 2.6% on top of that one as well, too.
Right. Yeah, and that gets us to 8.7%. So here we go. We've got the poll one of one. You know, we've got Cynthia as our sample size. Cynthia, it sounds like if I'm understanding her comment correctly, is that she believes in funding transportation, but she wants to see more accountability and she wants to see more fiscal responsibility. So that, I think, is going to be a big burden that the RTA in itself is going to have to overcome, because I know that Cynthia is not alone in feeling that way.
No, without a doubt. And, you know, it takes more than just restaurateurs to come up and speak out against this one. We happen to be big advocates of this, of fighting these sort of increases, because we see and pass on sales tax every single day to our guests, to our customers. It's very tangible for us over here. And that really creates that intersection, again, between restaurants and politics. And when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on a restaurateur, a local chef that has won a few, I think the last three pizza takedowns over here in Tucson. Miss Stephanie Molina coming up with Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition and Grant Kruger. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We are back in the KVOI studios. I've got guest host Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Josh also happens to be a restaurateur. He owns Lucky Wishbone and Arizona Sunland Foods, a major food manufacturer here in southern Arizona. And talking a little bit of food this half an hour, we happen to have a local chef, a bit of a local celebrity chef over here, Miss Stephanie Molina from Zio Pepe. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for joining us in the KVUI studios and taking time out of your day. I know operating kitchens is no easy feat, and being here at 7:30 in the morning is bright and early.
No, that's okay. A lot of us are insomniacs anyway, so we're used to it.
That's restaurants, okay. Yes. Kids, there's no sleep.
Family life, yeah, there is no such thing.
We are fully caffeinating over here on The Morning Voice, indeed. Hey, why don't you break down for us your restaurant history? How'd you get your start in the restaurant business, Steph?
So it all really started, one of my older brothers, I needed a job at 15, and he got me into a local restaurant. At the time, it was called Venice Pizzeria over on Wrightstown and Pantano. They have a special place in my heart forever. Yeah. That's how I started, just as a hostess, and worked my way through the ranks in the front of the house through busser, serving, bartending. And that's actually where I started practicing with pizza, but never really did it until I moved over to Empire Pizza and Pub down on Congress. So I stayed with them for over a decade, and that's really where I honed in on my pizza skills.
A decade in one place is a pretty good run over there for a chef. Those must be pretty good guys.
Oh, yes. Yep. Nope. I loved it. They also are always going to have a special place in my heart. And that's also where my brother worked. I think he was a part. He had a hand in helping open it or kind of get the kitchen going. And that was also where I think he learned and got his craft better before he moved out to San Francisco. So I stuck around and have just enjoyed it ever since. Pizza is, I often tell people, we're kind of like a black sheep in the culinary world, where it's different. We have our own vehicle, but we like to learn and take other techniques and then apply it to what we know best.
We have so many award-winning pizzerias in Tucson as well, though, too. When you think of it, you know, we market ourselves as, you know, the best Mexican food mm-hmm. in America, but I have to think that our pizza is, like, right up there as well, too. There are just so many great locally-owned pizzerias
there
here.
There really are. I mean, I could list many, but, I mean, Rocco's also is a special spot for me. Love that guy.
Yeah, he's just opened up that new location. Right down mm-hmm. Broadway, moved into his new digs over there in the Solon yes. Plaza. Really excited for him.
Yeah, Upper Crust is amazing. Fiamme has a great record. There are just so many of us who it's fun. It's a
fun
scene.
How do you feel about Empire Pizza?
Oh, of course, I love Empire Pizza. Empire with their elote, especially. But no, yeah, their Empire is a big one. Yeah.
Now, so, I'm just gonna ask a quick question, Stephanie. My family, our tradition is we have Friday pizza night.
Oh, awesome!
So, how can people order from you? And on a Friday night or a busy night, like how is the wait? Like how should people plan? Because I personally plan my night around when I'm getting my pizza and what movie I'm going to watch.
Yes, absolutely. We offer online ordering. That is usually the one that I recommend.
What's that web address?
I'm sorry?
What's the web address?
Oh, for Zio Pepe. I do believe it's just ziopepe.com, but let me just double check that. To do it through our actual website. We may even be able to do it through Google. I'd have to check. More often than not, we get the call-ins. They call and place the order, just old school it. And lucky for us, our oven moves very fast. So it really doesn't take long.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. I think ziopepe.com.
So you guys are all over the place with Zio Pepe. I was working with Matt Cable this weekend at both the Cola Guard Classic, right? He had a food truck over there at Westin La Paloma. And then when we did that aforementioned concert at the Rito Downs, Matt was over there as well, too. Like,
yes.
This guy is nuts. He is absolutely everywhere. What's it like working for Matt?
Oh, it's really fun. I mean, once he got that food truck, that's when it really, we hit the ground running with that one. And it is. It's so much fun. He's really immersed in the pizza world and culture, and he also is always wanting to learn more and try to just always keep us on our game and make us better every day, month. So, yeah, I have a lot of fun there, definitely. I've been there. They hired me before they opened, and it's been a learning experience, but just it's fun.
So what style of pizza is your favorite to make over there? Like, what's your fave?
So we do one style of pizza at Zio Pepe. I compare it to, like, a Neapolitan style. We have a gas oven, but it's wood-assisted, so we can use mesquite wood if we really want to bring out that flavor. So it is a little thinner, kind of like New York is similar as well. So those are the two we do, but he also likes to play around with Detroit style, which I love. That's when you kind of, it's thicker, you put the sauce on top. I think that's probably one of my favorite styles. He does that over at Fresco at his other business.
No, I'm a big fan of Detroit style pizza, big fan of Detroit. You hear me bring it up a lot of times as a Detroit native over here.
Oh, excellent.
So certainly something I get excited about too.
Yep. Those, and then Sicilian is probably my favorite type of pizza by far. We haven't gotten that down yet at Zio, just based on our type of dough.
Speaking of dough, can you throw it above your head and spin it?
I can't. Yeah, I can throw it up in the air. I actually often don't. People know that about me. The technique I use, I call it the tortilla method.
Okay.
So I do. I just toss it really quick back and forth, and then it's done. But we throw it in the air. I'm not fancy like some of the folks out there who can do all the crazy tricks.
But nonetheless, you're winning the awards.
I try to.
Yeah, so there's a little event that we've been doing the last decade or so now here in Tucson, right? This pizza throwdown and dessert duel that's happened over the last 10 years. And I understand you're the 3-time running champion. Is that true?
That is true. I have gotten the hat trick. and that's been really, really fun. And Matt Cable has even allowed me to do my own type of recipes and then one of his. At first he was really kind of like, oh, I don't know. But he allowed it 1 year and I did well. So that's what I run with. Although this year I have gotten the permission to participate in the dessert duel instead.
Oh, mixing it after you win 3 times in a row. Even the Chiefs couldn't win 3 Super Bowls in a row. But Stephanie's hanging up the gloves over here after 3 pizza titles. We're moving to dessert.
It would be fun. It's going to be a new experiment, and I'm still going to use our pizza dough for it. So it'll be a nice surprise. It fries really well.
Okay, so a little hint on what might be popping up over here on the dessert duel over there.
Yes, sir.
I see this. I see where you're going.
So it's, yeah, and it's our dough is awesome with the mesquite flour, hard red wheat, and capuchin. Pudo. it's got a little sweet taste, so it is perfect for a dessert dish, yes.
So tell me a little bit about that local flour that you guys use as well, too. Caputo Double Zero flour is kind of the gold standard, right? The Chevy 350 of pizza doughs over here to use. Give us our listeners a little bit of a rundown about what makes those local ingredients different.
Oh, so yeah. So we use the hard red wheat from BKW Farms. It's what you would expect out of wheat. It adds just that bit of flavor. But what it really, for me, I feel like it complements the mesquite, the mesquite flour is difficult to work with. And that's why we had to pair it up with another one. But it gives this sweetness to it that the other flours just don't, that you don't really find anywhere, quite frankly. And I've been using mesquite flour in my dough even before I started with Zio, which was the appeal for me with them. And I was like, oh, you're doing this too?
Were you sneaking this in at Empire? Like just adding a little pinch like behind the scenes?
I just started to play with it. Empire gave me the foundation of how to understand dough and all its intricacies of water and yeast and adding the mesquite flour, which it doesn't rise. There's not the gluten in it that you need. It gives a taste to it, I think, is its purpose. And for it to be local and something that is Tucsonan is excellent. It's us representing, you know, our home.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, as we keep talking about, you know, the best Mexican food in America, we're innovating on the pizza front quite heavily. I mean, there's just so many other great establishments over here that are absolutely bringing it.
So, Stephanie, Zio Pepe, AZZIOPEPPEAZ.com is how people order. What else is on the menu besides pizza? What are your sides? Do you have wings? Do you have...
The next best thing that we are known for is our elote arancini. So they are, you know, arancini balls, but we use corn, and that is the big part of that one. And all the way through it, we use mazza, and we end up covering it, coating it in like corn chips and then frying it.
Oh, dang.
And then we have, sauces that go with it and like, queso fresco. So that's one of our most popular appetizers. We have all of our pastas, everything. We're a scratch kitchen, so everything is made from scratch. And we have pastas where we use green chili, our bolognese. It's a garganelle, like a green chili bolognese. We use that in the pasta. So it's every little bit has some form of Sonoran touch to it. So a lot of people will come in often and expect kind of a normal Italian restaurant, mm-hmm. and we will have to remind them that we don't exactly have spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah. We have different versions. We have, you know, the fettuccine alfredo. It's fettuccine alfredorado. So we use called the sauce in it.
And there's a dispensary right down the street, right? And
our
menu, they keep you busy.
We're tucked in between a dispensary and a bar.
Getting the munchies over here on the morning voice.
Quickly.
I think we've all been to the Cow Pony one or two times.
Well, we're going to take a quick break over here. Don't go anywhere. You've got more of Josh Jacobson, Stephanie Molina from Zio Pepe, and Grant Kruger on 10:30 a.m. The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. I'm host Grant Kruger, and we've got in our KVOI studios Mr. Josh Jacobson from Lucky Wishbone and Arizona Sunland Foods, and the lovely Miss Stephanie Molina from Zio Pepe. That's right, three local restaurateurs taking our lumps over here, up with you guys before 8 o'clock in the morning to bring you all kinds of cool local things happening here in the Old Pueblo. Welcome back, Steph.
Well, hi. Thank you.
Hey, so all kinds of neat things are happening on Tanga Verde these days. I see there's a Sace Kitchen popping up right down the street from you guys over there.
We're very excited, yes.
The Saddle Horn has been rebranded as well, too, right? Mm. I saw Sally this weekend actually out at the golf tournament as well, too. They've opened up Uncorked.
Right. Yes, Uncorked. Yes, I have yet to visit, but and actually, are they open all the way, I think?
I believe so.
I think they might be. I saw they were ready, but I wasn't sure if they fully did yet. I've been waiting for it. They're excited about that one, too.
They're open, ready to go. You're right down the street from me over at the Maverick. You're right down the street from the Cow Pony as well, too. Mr. Jay Healy out there.
Yes, sir. Those are our neighbors.
How's it like being the neighbors to the Cow Pony?
Oh, it's well, they are actually great neighbors, honestly. And I think most of us are out of there before any crazy traffic comes through. But they, yeah, they're awesome. They're always very helpful if we're in need, and vice versa, if they need anything from us. I don't visit there often, but yeah, they're great. And Jay is really an awesome, nice guy.
So at one point, Tenga Verde was Tucson's Restaurant Row, right? I've hypothesized mm-hmm. that perhaps that's become Campbell Avenue at this point with mm-hmm. as many restaurants as we've got mm-hmm. popping up. What more do you think we need over there on the east side to help complete this revitalization of Tenga Verde as somebody that works on that strip?
You know, that's a good question. As I'm even thinking, I mean, through Tenga Verde, I mean, all the way down, there's definitely pizza. You have your options there. There's Sakura that is still there, but honestly, I in my head, I'm like, kind of feel like more Asian would be awesome. I know that there is a Mexican food place right around Sabino Canyon and Tenga Verde, maybe even a little bit more of that. I mean, we don't have enough in Tucson, but another Asian spot would be really awesome. And I do think that there is one that is close to Uncorked that had just opened. It went into wherever Mama's Hawaiian used to be. I just can't remember their name,
unfortunately. Yeah, Noodleholics.
Yeah, Noodleholics.
There we go.
Just saw the sign. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. And then I think there's even a place next to them. No, there's definitely room for more there.
Banchan. Banchan, Korean fried
Banchan.
Chicken.
Banchan, yeah. That's what it is. Thank you. Yeah, the Korean next Noodleholics. But there's definitely room. I mean, Scented Leaf is there now. I know that's not food, but
no, they've done
that. Place is a reverse ATM. People, that place is always jammed.
Yes.
Whatever their business model, they really hit
on
something.
I don't know what
that
this
place
is.
Always
so,
jammed.
So Scented Leaf Tea Room, right? It took over the old pizza place that had been there, you know, for a number of decades when the owner passed away. And we've had Shane Barella, owner of Scented Leaf, on this show over here. They took down that, you know, kind of busted old building and put a lot of money into it. Did that big, beautiful, bright mural. Yep.
Yeah.
And they are super busy. Well, I'm
Tito's
really excited for them.
Yeah.
Is that the old Tito's building?
Yep.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I was really heartbroken to see go, but I'm excited to see how they are doing now, the Scented Leaf. And we actually get our tea for Zio Pepe from there. So they give us great options for different versions of iced tea.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So break down again your favorite dishes at other local restaurants that you might like around here. Like, where do you go out, Steph? As a chef, as someone that's worked in so many places over here, that has won the pizza throwdown 3 times in a row, so many wins that you had to go to a different category. Where do you go out to eat?
So I think a lot of people are often shocked when I tell them that pizza is not in my top 3 category of what I like to eat, and it's nothing against it. It's just I do it day in and day out. I love sushi, but honestly, I like to go genuinely to Mama Luisa's is a great one. If I just want classic Italian, that's comfort food for me. I love Thunder Bacon. I do go there quite a bit and get down on his burgers, on Lindy's burgers, and his crazy appetizers that he has. And I'm trying to think of kind of where else we like to go. It's usually that I'm just in my own spot.
I understand. We don't get a lot of days off over here in the restaurant business. Speaking of days off, like, what are your hours over there at Zio Pepe, and where do we reach you? Where can listeners come check this place out?
So as Zio Pepe, we are open every day of the week, Sunday through Thursday, actually. We're open until 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and then Fridays, Saturdays, we are open 11 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Very cool.
I am there Monday through Fridays. I definitely take my weekends.
Nice. That's a great deal. That's what happens when you get a couple decades of seniority over there.
I was going to say, it didn't just come easy. I had to really work to have my weekends with my kids.
You have earned that one for sure, Ms. Molina. When is this next pizza throwdown over here? When are we going to defend your title?
That's a wonderful question. I think it usually falls around June. I'm not sure if Tucson Originals has set the exact date. I know they try to keep it around May or June, depending on what else they have. The next soonest thing I know that we're going to be at is the Festival of Books, the Tucson Festival of Books this weekend. We'll have our food Very truck cool. there for Zio Pepe. So people can come check us out there. The food truck pizza is amazing. That oven is awesome to work with. And Yeah, that would be the spot to see us next.
Lovely. Well, we look forward to checking you out at both the Festival of Books and at Zio Pepe. The lovely Miss Stephanie Molina, thank you so much for joining us on The Morning Voice. We got another hour of local Tucson fun coming up with Josh Jacobson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Lots of things happening this exciting Wednesday morning here in Tucson. I'm joined live in the KVUI studios by a number of dynamic business operators, restaurateurs over here. I've got Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition and Lucky Wishbone, and Dave Fermansky, owner of Empire Pizza, here in the studio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, big win for the business community last night in the 520, Proposition 414, going down in flames, right?
Yeah, it sure did. And you know, I think it's important to remember that, you know, this really had little to do with the support that the business community gives to first responders, because the business community is always the first to go out and support Chief Kazmar and our frontline officers. And, you know, for the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, we have great relationships with lots of officers that I would love to name on the radio, but, you know, we protect their identity. But Nate Foster, president of the Tucson Police Protective League, he's a great friend. And so when you really looked at the proposition and the way that it was set up, you know, we realized very quickly that it was a slush fund with no oversight, and that the mayor and council could really move the money around however they wanted. And we saw they changed their narrative many times over the course of the Yes campaign. Did you notice that, Grant?
I did. And this one, you know, got to a bit more partisan at the end, because they were really trying to make this a partisan issue, not so much a taxation or a slush fund issue.
Right. You know, so first of all, they started off saying, you know, we're in this terrible position because evil Governor Ducey and the evil Republican legislature created the flat tax for commercial businesses. And what we actually found out as we started doing research, which I don't think the media ever truly looked into and exposed, was that when the state created the flat tax, just for the listeners to remember, you know, the jurisdictions used to get 15% of the state shared revenue sent to the cities. Well, when we created the flat tax that went from 4% to 2.5%, then the state increased the percentage that state shared revenues got to the cities to 18% to offset that. And then what we saw is that really this shortfall that the mayor and council were talking about, because they were saying we're going to have this $27 million shortfall and it's because state funds are getting cut. Well, no, that's actually not true. The previous 5 years in the state of Arizona was such a roaring economy that we had a 71% increase in state share revenue because tax collection went up. And so they didn't plan for the slowdown. They were using one-time funds that they were getting from the state or the federal government, and they created these departments, and they didn't want to cut it. So then we find out, well, actually, guess what? The state's doing better. State shared revenue is coming in at 7.38% higher. We're looking at getting potentially 4% more in state shared revenue. And now we're looking at having a surplus at the end of the year of $22 million.
So that's nearly a $50 million swing between a $27 million shortfall, $22 million, you know, surplus. Throw in the extra $1.1 million that we just spent last night on an election, and you're at $50.1 million.
Right. And so as this conversation started to unfold, that's when we started seeing this partisan talking point that specifically Mayor Romero perpetrated over and over and over again. And even in if any of the listeners want to go and watch the Democrats of Greater Tucson meeting, you can watch Mayor Romero get really snippy with Michael Bryan, who is he's the moderator of DGT. He was doing a great job, and Mayor Romero started admonishing different advocacy groups that, Grant, you and I belong to, and the moderator basically said, look, you know, Mayor Romero, these people really aren't here to defend themselves. Do you you know, do we really need to say this? And boom, just like that, she turned on him and said, well, I never thought that I would see you stand up for Trumpers. And the fact of the matter is Grant, you know, matter, you know, just as well as I do, we're very diverse in these advocacy groups. You know, there are many people, all spans of the political spectrum. And so ultimately, I think that people saw through that talking point and they simply don't feel like they're getting what they're paying for as it is already.
To your point, Josh, in that exact exchange in the Democrats of Greater Tucson forum that you referenced, she called out Jim Click.
She did.
Okay, so, and just to give the listeners a little bit of flavor on this, Jim Click, and it, I'm guessing it probably wasn't his number one priority thing, but he did it anyway. He went and visited all the business people along Wetmore that they, along the Auto Mall,
mm-hmm.
all that property, and he helped the city when Jonathan Rothschild was the mayor. He helped get the incorporation passed.
That's right.
And that, for high ticket items like cars, that brought untold millions into the city. And for her to go after him personally in that moment, what an ingrate. And she could say, well, you know, Rothschild was the mayor. That was a favor he did to Rothschild. Well, she's on the council.
Right.
All that money that they brought in from the auto dealers, from high ticket items, like, I don't know, cars, you know, that all went to the city. All that boosted the city sales tax revenues a whole bunch. And for her to call out that guy that helped, that partnered with the city, something maybe he, I don't know, but maybe he didn't really want to do that, but he says, okay, I'll play ball, right?
You know, Jim Click is a statesman for the community.
Sure.
He does so much. He donates so much of his money, donates his time, his resources. You know, and I think that one of the things that happened between Mayor Romero, the council members, and even Tim Tomior, they said a lot of things about the business community out loud.
Yep.
And
the quiet part out loud, right, Josh?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
They said the quiet part out loud.
And, you know, the business community, don't forget for the listener, and I know I'm preaching to the choir with this listenership, but, you know, the business community is always the first to step up to donate. You need something for your little league? Donate. Law enforcement needs something? Donate. You need something for a fundraiser, for whatever it is? Donate, 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 donate. And without the business community, this town would be, you know, what do we have? Because we are a town. We are a service town that is run by, you know, people like us in the restaurant business, fulfillment centers. We, you know, we are a big part of this community. And frankly, you know, as you said, Matt, the quiet part out loud.
You bet. You bet.
Well, this was ultimately demised in such a way that they could turn this on you and say, if you voted against 414, you have voted against public safety and first defenders. And I think that that's a real misnomer. That's not what this was. I bet that had the city of Tucson just made a quarter percent, I should better say, tax increase, saying, hey, we needed only police and first responders. Had we made this tax for just that, I bet this may have passed.
Okay, so I think you're right there. And I think the other thing that had egos been set aside, and if the business community would have heard from the mayor and council, if they would have made the rounds, they would have talked to us, they would have created buy-in, we wouldn't have had this opposition. But by the time they already had the plan for this proposition, it was too late. There was no input that we could give to them to change anything. It was a done deal. And I know we're coming up against the break, and I actually want to talk a little bit more about the budget on the other side of the break, because we learned so much about what is really going on and how a lot of the city employees feel and the way that they're being treated in departments and you know, things that, Grant, you and I have talked out about. For instance, we get a lot of hate when we talk about wages and what it is like to create benefits and employment and how we have to struggle to make sure that we are being good employers and wanting our people to stay with us. And we really found out a lot about how the city is really just a house of cards in a lot of ways.
Without a doubt, that deeper look into the city budget reminds me a lot of how we got a deeper look into the education process during COVID as well too, when suddenly parents really started paying attention to what our kids were being taught in schools, and it opened a lot of eyes. I think there's a lot of eyes opened up about that city of Tucson budget now. And I think this is going to be big topics of discussion moving forward, not just about the free bus, not just about the housing projects and whatnot that the city is participating in on the side, but like a real deep look at how we're handling a $2.4 billion budget over here. That's an awful lot of money, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's take a quick break. We've got more riveting discussion in 414. You're sitting here with three restaurateurs, Dave Firmansky from Empire Pizza, Josh Jacobson, and Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Don't go anywhere. What a great day in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We've got Josh Jacobson live in studio. We've got Dave Firmansky from Empire Pizza. We're talking all the craziness that happened last night in the city of Tucson special election. Proposition 414 going down in flames for those of you just turning in, losing with nearly 70% of the voters in the city of Tucson going no.
Yeah, so... you know, Grant, I want to get back into the budget, but you know, Dave here, being a restaurant guy, you were kind of watching this thing from the sidelines. Do you live in the city or the county?
I live inside the city.
Oh, okay. So you were able to vote in this. I'm sure you were paying attention to all the arguments and thinking about how it would, you know, potentially affect your business, your customers. What did you think about last night?
It was such a great victory. I'm really surprised. Usually it seems like these fly right under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
It's just half a cent. So many people ignore it and they pass.
Yeah. It was interesting because, you know, Tara Oster and several other volunteers and I, we did a lot of canvassing. We did a lot of door knocking, calling people. And we just never really found voters that were really enthusiastic about voting yes. And obviously we saw that in the results, but you know, Grant, you and I have talked about this many times. Normally we're on the other end of this conversation where we're the ones getting pounded. And you know, this, it really felt different this time. I think people are truly feeling that financial pinch. And when they're put in a situation where they have to decide between their personal income and telling the city that they need to be fiscally responsible, get back to core services, prioritize the charter, that's exactly the mandate that they gave to the mayor and council.
So where do you see the city budget, Josh, going off course over here? Like, what are the core, because we know the core services, right? Mm-hmm. To provide roads and to provide public safety in the parks. These are right there in our city charter. Where has the city, in your opinion, gone off course? Like, where do we need to correct that and kind of steer back towards center?
Well, you were right when you said that people are really paying attention to the budget now. So some of the things that we learned, just to remind the listeners, is that when we're looking at other jurisdictions around the state, the city of Tucson has increased their tax the most over the last 10 years. This would have been the fourth tax increase that we've done just for the city. Number two, when we compare ourselves to Mesa is about ready to overtake Tucson as the second largest city in the state of Arizona. And, you know, Pima County in Southern Arizona is going to be forgotten, and it truly will be the great state of Maricopa. But looking at Mesa, you know, in Tucson, we spend roughly 30% of our budget on first responders. Mesa's spending 54%. Mesa spends more on roads than the city of Tucson does. But the really interesting thing to me was when the folks from Housing and Community Development showed up at a city council meeting and they started talking at Call to the Audience. And what we learned during that segment was that, you know, the city of Tucson did this big thing during the minimum wage that we were talking about, that they wanted to increase the cost. They wanted to increase living wages, and they talked this big game. And, you know, it's stuff that we all aspire to do. You know, our businesses do better when people have money in their pockets, right?
Without a doubt.
So who's going to say, no, I don't want people to have higher wages, but there has to be a way to get there. You have to manage your P&L. You have to have, you know, the business, you have to have the money to pay these wages. It has to come from somewhere. But what the city did is they increased the starting wage for their new hires. And we found out that their senior employees were making $5 to $6 an hour less than new people coming in. We heard from some of these employees in the Housing and Community Development that they were making less money than the people that they were actually slotting into Section 8 housing and low-income housing. And they're struggling. So then we also find out that now fiscal year 26, the city's projecting that they're going to have a $13 million deficit. And so as a result, what are they going to do? They're going to shift costs for insurance and benefits onto the city workers. So city workers are going to be paying more for their benefits. So they're, you know, you pay more for your benefits, your take-home pay goes down. But what else are we paying for that's got a price tag of roughly $13.5 million that the city won't give up?
Let me take a quick guess over Please. Here. Is this the crime bus, sir?
It's the free crime bus. So, you know, if I was a city employee, if I was a first responder that hasn't gotten my cost of living increase in many years, you know, they have like these step up bases on how they're supposed to get pay raises. That hasn't happened for a long time. That has all been frozen. If I was somebody in housing and community development that's making $5 to $6 less than a new hire, if I was somebody in the water department that now is going to be paying more for insurance, I'd be mad as hell about the misprioritization of these funds. And it just demonstrates even more that we've got leadership that talks about these pie in the sky concepts, ice cream for everyone. But when the rubber meets the road, it doesn't work out that way. And that's what we have been saying all along. And that's one of the things that's been really frustrating to me as a small business owner.
Without a doubt. So we've got elections for city council coming up this year either way. That's not a special election. This is the regular cadence of the city of Tucson elections, which happen, as I've mentioned many times before on the show, on odd years, right? 2023, 2025, done purposefully to make sure that these don't line up with popular gubernatorial or presidential elections, things that get people's blood boiling and really excited about politics. Instead, this kind of happens on the other years. Mm-hmm. Or like this special election that happened last night, even outside of that cadence, low voter turnout, low involvement. Do you expect a higher voter turnout this November? And do you think that there's a chance for candidates that are not part of the Democrat Party to even have a mathematical chance in 2025 in November?
I think that that's still going to be a tough lift because of, you know, something that you talk about all the time, Grant, the fact that we have citywide voting versus ward only voting. If we're able to change that, and hopefully we've got a solution there not too far from now, then it gives a fighting chance. But the other thing that I would say is that even though, you know, the percentage-wise, we've got twice as many Democrats as Republicans, and then independents more than Republicans as well. So the likelihood of getting a Democratic representative is very high. But I think that I'm hopeful that we're going to start seeing more division on the city council. I'm hopeful that we're going to see, you know, maybe Councilman Cunningham, Councilwoman Lee start to stand up a little bit more and say, hey, I don't really believe in going this direction. I think that this is a better solution. And I think that one of the reasons that I'm hopeful that we're seeing that is because I don't think it's a secret that, you know, Councilman Cunningham would like to be mayor someday. Maybe Councilwoman Lee would be. But in order for that to happen, we're going to have to start seeing a different leadership style from them. Because one of the things that the mayor and council did do is they gave themselves a healthy raise, right? And so now, hopefully, we're going to start getting some more talent that's wanting to run for those seats.
Well, in fairness, like the voters gave mayor and council a healthy raise. This was referred to the ballot, but the voters did choose mm-hmm. that particular one.
This is what David was just talking about. Right. You know, this stuff just goes under the radar and it gets passed.
Yep.
And on low turnout numbers.
Right.
Without a doubt. But that healthy raise is actually a good idea. I've got a segment of that one coming up after the break with SCR 1003 with respect to our state legislators, for those that are going to stick around after this break, and we'll talk a bit about that, because the compensation for our electeds is something important.
It is.
Right? It's like at the end of the day, if this isn't worth your while, like you're not going to get talented people out there. We know in the restaurant business, right, if we didn't raise our wages over the last 4 or 5 years, we weren't going to be competitive. We weren't going to attract talent to be able to make the beautiful food that you've come to know and love and expect from Tucson restaurants. And yet our lawmakers, both, you know, citywide and statewide, were getting paid less than the assistant shift manager at a Wendy's.
Right. So back to hopefully we're paying more. We're going to get some new talent. We need some of our council members to start having a larger leadership role, and so that we don't have these 7-0 votes just constantly, so that we can start cleaning up the community. People, when we were canvassing, we heard People are sick and tired of the roads. They're sick and tired of public safety not working for them, and they're sick and tired of being poor. Those are the three big things on people's minds. And we can talk about these wonderful pie in the sky concepts, but unless we actually have a plan to get there, we're going to stay like that. And that's really what we've seen, you know, over the last 20 years, is we just keep getting worse and worse. And when you're pushing a tax on one of the poorest communities in the state of Arizona, and the tax would make Tucson the highest taxed in the state of Arizona for a major city, that's a problem with leadership. So I think that I'm hopeful that we're going to see some different thoughts on that council.
Well, we certainly may see a different head even on the mayor side of things, as obviously Congressman Grijalva's health has come into question, you know, missing so many votes over these last couple of years too. And at what point does the Democrat Party decide that it's time for him to step down, right? Someone that very adamantly spoke out about it was time for Biden to step aside, himself is now in the crosshairs, and people are asking that same question.
Right. You know, the rumor I'm hearing is potentially April. That's a rumor. Who knows? And, you know, the Hernandez family, I'm sure that either Daniel, Alma, or Consuelo, I could see one of them throwing their hats in the ring. I have no idea which one. I have no idea if that's going to happen. But they were also huge assets in going against 414 as well.
Without a doubt. Well, thank you, Josh, for coming on and joining us on The Morning Voice. And Dave from Empire Pizza, I always appreciate the perspective of active and involved business owners such as yourself. Don't go anywhere. When we come back after the break, I'm going to be talking on the food for thought, the four things you need to know going into your day in Southern Arizona. You're listening to Grant Krueger on 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger, bringing up the second half of our second hour over here with you, and I'm going to give you your food for thought. These are the four things you need to know going into your day in the Old Pueblo. As we talked about at the top of the hour, Proposition 414 is certainly number one on our list. This particular ballot initiative would have raised the city of Tucson's sales tax an extra 0.5%, and the votes are in. We got the drop last night, about 8:15. Credit to the city of Tucson Election Department, but I guess that's what happens when you don't actually have polls open. This is a mail-in only special election in the month of March, a month that we don't normally do elections, but 53,350 Tucsonans voted no. That's 69.76% for those keeping score at home. That is nearly 70% no. That is a landslide. That is a mandate, my friends.
More than 2-1.
Was a $1.1 million mistake by the city of Tucson. And now, what do we do moving forward on that one? What do we learn, right? So many times we get our teeth kicked in these elections, and Josh Jacobson, who was nice enough to spend this last hour with us on the show, we're always talking about whether we win or we learn. And we've done a lot of learning over the last decade here in Tucson, so it's kind of neat to actually be on the winning side of the argument. But we still need to learn. We've got to figure out the messaging to the city of Tucson, not just from the business communities, but from our citizens as well, too, about what we can do better. How can we make the Old Pueblo a better place? I don't want to spend this half an hour banging on our electeds. I want to figure out ways to actually fix our city over here. As I commute every day down Campbell or down Alvernon on our way to the Bustos Media KVOI studios, I see what's happening in Midtown. I see the empty strip malls. I see the shopping carts. I see the encampments. And you do too. What are we going to do about it? Because raising taxes even higher clearly wasn't the answer. 70% of our voters came in and said, no, we've got to figure it out. It does come with more law enforcement. It does come with enforcing rules that are currently on the books. It's illegal to panhandle from the medians right now in the city of Tucson. We don't need a ballot initiative. We don't need to change electeds. We just need to enforce the laws that we already have. So simple. So number one on your list is Proposition 414. Certainly, we're going to do a lot more learning, and I think we're all going to have to work together. And I'm hoping that after this mandate from the city of Tucson, that perhaps our electeds will reach out to the business community, maybe a little olive branch, maybe a little bit of involvement next time. And no, not in some community meeting that was announced 2 days before at some public library that nobody knows about. but an actual sit down, an opportunity for us to break bread together and say, how do we work together to make Tucson a better place? Maybe I'm just being overly optimistic over here, but that is my dream in a post 414 world. And we're going to see, I guess, in November, if we get the RTA election now coming up after this 414 lost. Number two on our list is SCR 1003 making its way through Senate committee hearing. Now, those that aren't plugged into state politics probably don't know what this one is. This happens to be a Senate concurrent resolution by State Senator John Kavanaugh, and he's attempting to send to the ballot in 2026 a raise for our state representatives. Those that don't know, our state senators and our House representatives make a grand total of $24,000 a year. An amount very similar to what, in fact, exactly the same as what our city council was making until this Proposition 413 a couple of years ago raised the wages for city council candidates. Now, I'm confident that in the long term, these raises for our electeds are worthwhile. We haven't had a raise in over 20 years for these electeds. We get so excited about all these laws that they make, the COVID shutdowns, rules about abortion, things that get people all hot and bothered. And yet we pay them, as I said at the last hour, the wage of the assistant shift manager at Wendy's. These are some of the most powerful people in the entire state. And then you wonder why they take money from special interests. We break down the campaign finances like a hawk tearing through these things, figuring out whether you got some money from special interests somewhere. Well, no doubt. Of course they did. They're getting paid $24,000 a year. And so I'm hopeful that this one will both make its way through the full Senate vote and at that point through the House, where it will not need a governor or won't be up for governor review. One of the neat things about concurrent resolutions is that they go right to the ballot, avoiding a veto. We saw this sort of thing happen last year with 13, you know, total things. Yeah, it was a pretty crowded ballot right there, Matt. And I wasn't too excited about the quantity of things that were on the ballot, but I am excited about this one. I truly hope that our voters will, in fact, vote in a raise for these particular elected officials, because no matter where you stand politically, I believe we'll get a more quality candidate if we pay better. This isn't shocking. This is business 101. This is a lesson that I learn every single day in my business, right? Our job is to manage costs, of course, but our people, they're not widgets. They're not machines. They need to make enough money to get by, right? The left talks about paying a living wage and everything is a living wage. And yet our state electeds right now are, in my opinion, particularly severely underpaid, especially with respect to how long our legislative session lasts, right? This was designed to be a half a year job, January 1 through, let's call it the end of May or so, but now this is going into June. This is going into July. Like, this is nearly an entire calendar year at this point. And with decades of no raise, you're looking at a wage that is so uncompetitive. Who would want to do that job? Who would want to be that person to go through that level of stress for $24,000 a year? I couldn't even hardly get a hostess to do that sort of work for that kind of pay. So hoping that SCR 1003 makes its way through and becomes a ballot initiative, a Senate-referred ballot initiative for us in 2026. Here's looking at that one. Now, number three on my list is something that does play into our Tucsonans over here, and that's Southwest Airlines. Yesterday, Southwest Airlines has announced that there are going to be no free bags starting on May 28th. We don't have an awful lot of airlines flying out of TIA.
After all these years of touting that as a competitive advantage for them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Tucson International Airport is basically only an international airport because we've got the occasional flight back and forth from Hermosillo, Sonora. It's really a pretty small regional airport, and Southwest happens to be one of our biggest players, right? This is an airline that probably all of us fly out to at some point. And this goes back to our messaging from earlier on in the show, that nothing in life is really free. Right? We've spoiled our guests into thinking that carrying your up to 50-pound bag is somehow no inconvenience at all. This is absolutely free. We'll just write this one in to the cost. We've let you know in the restaurant business that bread drop, those free chips and salsa are absolutely free. None of this has any value whatsoever. But in reality, there's a pretty tremendous cost to all of these items, right? Nothing that a business gives you is free. I've never been able to go to the free chips and salsa manager manufacture and have them delivered to me. I don't know about where the free bread store is. Perhaps those in the city of Tucson might be able to help me out with that. But nonetheless, I pay bakers top wages right in the city to make those sort of products. And Southwest Airlines pays an awful lot of money to carry your particular bags as well, too. Baggage fees were estimated to be, in collections, were $1.4 billion for American Airlines alone, $1.2 billion for United Airlines, and Southwest Airlines got $73 million. So they were leaving $1 billion, with a B, that's half the city of Tucson's budget, on the table, not charging for these bags. And suddenly, on May 28th, flying out of Tucson, you are going to have to start to pay for something that has always cost that airline. That is number three on our list. And number four is Selection Sunday coming up this Sunday. Everybody getting excited about the Wildcats. We've had kind of a rough finish to our season over here. The Big 12 tournament starts tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. We're going to have a game against the UCF Kansas winner at 8:30. And if we win that one, we'll have a semifinal game also at 8:30 on Friday night. And if we're lucky enough to win that one, we'll be in the Big 12 championship. That's 5 p.m. on Saturday night. But the big daddy of them all is, of course, Selection Sunday. That's the big day. That happens at 3 p.m., right, on CBS Sports to find out what seed Arizona gets. We're going to have the entirety of the University of Arizona basketball team and Coach Tommy Lloyd at Union Public House starting at 2 p.m., on that Sunday. We're going to watch that show together live from the courtyard. We're hoping CBS Sports will be there live and cut. So when they say the 5 seed out of the West, the University of Arizona Wildcats, we're hoping for a live shot right there of hundreds of fans celebrating and supporting our Wildcats. So do come out for that one. The tournament is always one that gets everybody excited in Tucson. There probably isn't a sporting event with more meaning in our particular town than the NCAA tournament, and that is coming up this weekend. So we're going to take a quick break. I got one more segment of the Morning Voice coming up for you after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. We've got a 100% chance of rain coming up on Thursday night, according to Matt. But we've also got a 100% chance of cool things happening in the restaurant and hospitality scene here in the Old Pueblo. And to close out our final segment of the day, we're going to go over what is going down over here. First and foremost, one of my favorite events of the year coming up is the Agave Heritage Festival. First and foremost, they've moved this now from early May, which was a really tough time of year to do this in the restaurant business, right? I know they wanted to put this around Cinco de Mayo for all the reasons, but quite frankly, we're really busy in a Mexican restaurant and it's hard to ask for support from tequila and Mexican restaurant manufacturers when you're going on Cinco de Mayo. So the Agave Heritage Festival has moved to Thursday, April 10th to Sunday, April 13th. And this is happening downtown. There's all kinds of neat conferences, samplings, everything about agave spirits. And this isn't just tequila. This is mezcal as well, too. Mezcal happens to be an amazing growth category here. As somebody that operates a big Mexican restaurant with a tremendous tequila and mezcal selection in Reforma Modern Mexican, I can tell you mezcal's interest has doubled, if not tripled, over these last 5 years as people get into agave spirits that are, quite frankly, not just tequila as well, too. Mezcal happens to be made from one of over 40 different species of agaves, as opposed to tequila, which is just the Weber Blue Agave. And many, many cool mezcals are going to be participating in this one as well, too. So if you haven't yet put this one on your calendar, go to agaveheritagefestival.com. You'll get some more information about that one on Thursday. Of most interest to me, 3 to 4 p.m. at the Carriage House, Howard Scott Gentry is giving a lecture about agaves. This is probably the world expert in agaves. I had a cocktail named after this guy at Reforma for a decade. Super sharp if you want to nerd out on these sort of things. Also in the restaurant news, Iron John's has announced that they're closing their location at 5350 East Broadway. Right? Iron John's, another local brewery. We have a lot of breweries and a lot of pizzerias on The Morning Voice. We've had a lot on Jump in Tucson as well, too. They've announced that they're closing their store in the Williams Center. But it's not all sad news. A little birdie tells me that they may, just may, have some interest in a location downtown on Congress, and we may be seeing a rebirth arising from the ashes of Iron John's in a new location downtown. So this particular closure, while sad and atypical, of course, for restaurants seemingly closing in February and March in Tucson, like, what is going on over here with that? This one, I think, has more to do with a move. They haven't announced it yet, but you have heard it here first on The Morning Voice. There's most likely a location popping up downtown, which should be pretty cool and a neat way to fill a couple of very important and empty spaces that we currently have in the downtown area. Now, on other restaurant news this week, we've got St. Patrick's Day coming up. St. Patrick's Day and Cinco de Mayo are very interesting restaurant holidays because the day of the week they fall on really affects how that impact is going to be, right? Because most people, unlike New Year's Eve, where you have New Year's Day off the next day, you don't get El Sexto de Mayo off work, so you really can't go deep until 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Yeah. Unless you want to stay up all night. Right, I always say on The Morning Voice over here, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. But quite frankly, these holidays, when they hit on a Monday or Tuesday, are a little quieter. You got a rockin' happy hour, but they don't have the late night. But when they come and hit on a Friday or Saturday, look out. Yeah. It is getting wild over here. So St. Patrick's Day is falling on a Monday this year. So look out for your local Irish pubs. It's going to be a rockin' happy hour. You may want to stay off the streets about 10 p.m. I know these aren't as big of holidays here in the Western United States as they are on the East Coast, where there's a much stronger Irish population and a little closer association with that heritage. But St. Patrick's Day is always going to stick in my dome for pretty much the rest of my life in the restaurant industry, because it was St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2020, that was absolutely the worst day of my life, pretty much in the restaurant business and maybe even life up front to think about. And that was the day of the COVID closures of all of our businesses, where I was forced to lay off 200 employees in pretty much a single swoop based on governmental decrees to protect us from the novel coronavirus. And every restaurant in the city of Tucson was shut down in the middle of St. Patrick's Day. This happened at 8 p.m. or so, and it happened to fall on a Tuesday that time. I remember the day. It would have been Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. And that one is always going to weigh heavily on me. I think for the next years, every time St. Patrick's Day comes up, we're going to reflect upon that closure. We've got a sort of a five-year anniversary, I guess, happening this Monday on that one, as all of us restaurateurs look back and figure out, you know, the rights and wrongs that we did in that one. Now, I give everybody a hall pass for the first couple weeks of COVID. We truthfully didn't know. This could have been the rapture. This could have been the apocalypse. But instead, this turned into a restaurant-centric attack that, on a level that I would have never imagined. If you would have told me that aliens would have come down from outer space and created a disease that would have adversely affected restaurants more than, say, chain shopping stores or drive-thrus, and that these would have been somehow, you know, adversely punished, I would have said, you're crazy. You couldn't make up a science fiction novel that had these sort of results. And yet, that happened. 5 years ago to the day, pretty much over here, that will pass by the next time we have a Morning Voice show. So just bringing that one up out there. I know we had a lot of local restaurateurs both on the show today and a lot of listeners as well, too. I'm thinking about all of you guys on St. Patrick's Day as we reflect upon both the good and bad that happened to all of us in that industry. And 5 years later, I'm proud to say that we've fully recovered. We've hired hundreds of people back. Our businesses have grown and are stronger and better off because of it. And you, my listeners, are as well, too. So I hope that you guys have a wonderful week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us every Wednesday morning on The Morning Voice, 7 to 9 a.m. Again, Selection Sunday coming up before St. Patty's Day. Come join Coach Tommy Lloyd and the entire crew and myself in St. Phillips Plaza, 2 p.m. Looking forward to seeing your beautiful faces again next week. It has been an absolute pleasure. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Kathleen Wynn coming up next.